Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
This is Don't Tell Me the Score, the podcast that uses sport to explore life's bigger questions. My name is Simon Mundy, and each week I sit down with an expert, from the biggest sporting names in the world to Buddhist monks, neuroscientists, psychologists, and philosophers. We discuss a theme that tells us something insightful and important about life and how best to live it, from the importance of self-acceptance to facing addiction and developing resilience, right through to getting your circadian rhythms in sync and how to sleep better. Sport is a metaphor for life, and in this podcast, I aim to prove that right. I always like hearing from you, so the best way to get in touch is via my website, simonmundy.com, or I'm at Simon Mundy on social media. In this episode, I'm talking to the legendary jockey, Frankie Dettori, about positivity. Frankie Dettori, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm okay. I am licking my wounds from a very exciting and successful Royal Ascot, and had a few drinks on Saturday night, and I'm recovering slowly. Self-inflicted pain.
Hey, hangovers don't get any easier as you get older, Frankie.
Yeah, correct. But it was worth it. We had a few people around on Saturday, my kids, my wife, and some friends, and just looking back at what a great week I've had at Royal Ascot. So I'm trying to enjoy it. You know, I'm not going to ride forever. I'm 49. So, it is try to enjoy this last few years that I got left. And amazing.
I mean, it was an incredible week. You stole the show at Ascot yet again. Matched the record of Pat Eddery, so 73 winners in total. And on that last day, you got a 151 treble. On a day like that, when you race that well, do you have a feeling that it's going to be your day?
Well, I went into Royal Ascot on the Tuesday thinking, well, I've got some decent rides. Everyone... goes into it thinking the same. You still have to ride them. You still have to win. And I go into the last day, I thought, well, you know, it's a big day. It's three group ones. And I got three chances in all three of them. And then I needed to ride three to win the top jockey. So when the first one went in, I thought, well, now it's possible. I need two more. And then, as it happens, it was, yeah, it did. I missed the crowd. I think if the crowd was there, they probably would have knocked it down, I'll be honest with you, because you know what people are like on a Saturday. They're very vocal, and I'm the man to follow at Ascot. And I would say if the crowd was there, well, usually on the Saturday of Royal Ascot, it's probably the biggest one, almost 80,000. It would have been magnificent. But nevertheless, I still enjoyed it. And it was a very great day for me, actually.
You're a gregarious person. Like, you're obviously, you know, you're the best known jockey. You have a way of connecting with the crowd as well as with the horse. And I want to talk to you about that. But to what degree did you miss then the energy of the crowd? Because I would have get the impression someone like you would really feed off that. Yet you proved you don't need it to be a success.
I do need it. I do need it. I missed it. I mean, look, once the stores open, it's bred in us to try to win. You know, I've been doing it for over 30 years. You know, once the stores open, you want to try to beat the others and try to win. And then, you know, okay, the crowd wasn't there, but, you know, I do, you know, I know myself so well now that I feed off the crowd. I interact with them and they lift me. They give me that extra, you know. And, you know, even so, then I did do well for various reasons. I say if I would have had the crowd behind me, perhaps I would have won the last one as well. It could have been four, but it is what it is. And it's a difficult time for everyone, but at least I'm doing what I love, you know, riding races. And I say the quality of racing the Ascot was amazing.
As someone who is gregarious, is a people person, has lockdown been hard for you?
Oh, terrible. I mean, I got... myself and my wife, we have built a dream home last year. And one last thing that I persuaded to do was do an outside swimming pool. Well, it came really handy this year because we had an amazing summer, so it got plenty of use in the lockdown. But I don't think I ever been in the house more than 3 days in a row. I get cabin fever. You know, I need to get on an aeroplane. I need to travel a lot. It's been part of my life for over 20 years. And I really found it difficult to be, you know, even so that I got a beautiful big house, I find it really difficult to be at home for so long. Luckily, then the horses still have to be trained and still have to go out. So four times a week I was in the stable, so that kept my mind off it. But we got to a point that, you know, I got five kids and we all snapping at each other for stupid reasons. You know, who didn't not empty the dishwasher or who nicked the last ice cream from the freezer? I mean, we were just arguing about silly things. I think they, even my family, they're not used to see me home for so long. So it was a double-edged sword, basically. We all got in each other's nerves a little bit. But it's funny now that I started racing, it's all pretty much, to me, is back to normal, you know. So it's been a trial times. And I think... my family was just as happy as I was when races started.
Did you learn anything about yourself or about being more still and not rushing around? Or was it just a trial?
What made me realise was I'm definitely not ready for retirement. That's for sure. You know, I always get asked when I'm going to retire. And I'll be honest with you, no way in the near future. I'm not ready for my slippers and pipe mode yet. I'm still want to go out there and jump off the horses like a frog. So, that's one thing I learned. I'm not ready to to settle down yet.
That brings me on to the to a key question, really, Frankie. So, I mean, you know, you're 49 years young. I'm going to say that old cliche.
Yeah.
Have you still got your youthful looks, despite, you know, having overdone it on Saturday? You've still got that full head of luscious Italian hair, still absolutely doing the business in the saddle. 2019, a vintage year for you. You know, there are lots of greats currently in various sports who do really well late in their career, but there are few who are doing as well as you, you know, did last year, did last week. What's your secret to this power and skill and success you're having in your longevity, and to what degree is it related to your outlook on life?
Well, I don't feel 49. Jamie Spencer accuses me of dyeing my hair. Well, I haven't done yet. I never will, probably. I'm very lucky in that way. I believe the biggest skill in this world is stress or worrying. I've always been a happy-go-lucky person. Obviously, my plane crash 20 years ago, they made a huge difference on my outlook in life. I'm so lucky that I do something that I love. I love the horse itself. I love the competition. I love being outside. You know, it took me 30 years to make a name of myself. I love the people shouting my name. I'm addicted to it. And I need to perform. I need a crowd. You know, like, I guess, an actor when he goes on stage at the theater, you know, I need that buzz. And I think that's what's kept me young. And that's perhaps why I haven't lost my chair and it's still brown at the moment with a couple of grey coming through. So I think that's, you know, most of it, you know, that I have a good, positive outlook in life and I'm very lucky to do what I love, you know.
Yeah, and we'll come back.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely makes big sense. So we'll come back to a couple of things you mentioned there, and clearly doing something you love and being grateful are key things, and they've shown that they are key elements in people who do live a long and happy life. And then we'll come back as well to that episode that happened to you 20 years ago that changed your outlook. But let's go back even further. And what, you've been here in England for what, nearly 35 years now? Is that right?
Correct. I became here in 85. July 85. It'd be 35 years in July.
35 years. When you came over, you didn't speak particularly good English or any of that. Was it hard when you came over? Did you have to toughen up and become resilient quickly?
It was hard because obviously language barrier. And, you know, I was a foreigner. You know, I was a bullied a little bit from the stables, but you know, I was on my own, so I had to toughen up. And then 3 months in, when I started to gasp a few words and started to making friends, then I loved it. Basically, I loved. Well, I turned to 15. I loved the freedom. You know, I didn't have my parents shouting at me. I basically lived in a bed and breakfast. I was my own person. And then I made friends. Then, you know, you start becoming an adult. So I was chasing the girls. And then my riding was getting better. So it all just came together, you know. You know, my parents were really strict, so not even them shouted at me all the time was quite good. My character came out, you know. I was always suppressed by my father all the time, you know. It was always strict and pulling me down. So when I was in England, then my real character came out and I started expressing myself, and here we are.
And here we are, indeed. So you've been here in England, you know, for most of your life. But obviously, you know, you're still as Italian as they come. And I spoke to a guest called John Kerwin, a rugby great, recently, and he spent some time in Italy. He's from New Zealand, and he spoke about how he just fell in love with the Italian way of life. So the 4-hour dinners every night, the love of life, that the attitude that if you can break bread with your family, whatever else is going on, then everything is all right. You know, what would you say are the key differences between the Italian outlook and the British outlook, and what can Brits learn from the way Italians live?
I think the Italian people are closer to their family. They don't travel as much. The pace of life is not as fast as England. We are very blessed and the climate is great. And we the seasonal food that we get for the four seasons, a lot of life revolves around being together, lunches and dinners and holidays. I think in England, the pace is much faster. We travel a lot. It's so more congested, and we do a lot of things on the go. You know, we travel a lot.
You talked about stress and you know how stress can be a bad thing. Is that slower, more relationship focused way of life around family time, around friends, around food? Is that something, do you think, Britain could learn from? And do you think that as well the lockdown has may bring that forward a little bit?
I really don't know how to explain it, really. I think the way that we do behave in England is it just didn't happen just one generation. It's been in this system for many hundreds of years, so you can't change. Even the Italian culture is, you know, is thousands of years old, you know, so You can't all of a sudden change like this. But that's, you know, even I changed. You know, I mean, I am Italian. I love the Italian system. But I feel like when I do go home now to Italy, after a couple of weeks, I get bored because I'm used to the faster pace. I used to, you know, so I'm trying to combine the two. But I guess if I go back to Italy full time, I'll probably go back to my old ways. But at the moment, because I live this English lifestyle, I'm become more English than Italian. So it's very hard to really explain or to make people change, you know. So
yeah, sure.
So it's you know, the Italian, you know, I guess I'm trying to combine the two. So
yeah,
try to get the best of both worlds.
Exactly. Now, when you did come over here and Luca Comani took you under his wing, and he said you had been living with your grandmother before you came, and he said that you lacked discipline. How true is that? And how did you learn to be so disciplined thereafter, or become disciplined?
Listen, I was 15. I was wild. I mean, nobody could tell me what to do. I was like breaking every rules that was to be broken. But, you know, I was just a kid, basically. I mean, discipline comes when you have responsibilities. And when I think it started when I started riding, and I realized that, you know, I am riding in important races. I have to ride for important owners, and that's when you really realize, you know, you have to grow up. So I think comes with the responsibility, discipline. You know, once you realize that, you know, it's important, you know.
But your impulsive side or that instinctual side, obviously you didn't want to completely get rid of that, because that's something you seem to draw on in your racing and to be successful. So is it, again, like you were saying with the Italian English, a bit of a combination of the two?
Yeah, obviously, look, I came to England where we were, I'm talking about my sport, it was really for lords, sheikhs, queen, the rich people. It was not really accessible to the public, and it was very stiff and very serious. Lester Stone Face, Pat Edry, they were all, you know, really dark people. And it only started in 1990 when Sky came along and pushed football, rugby and cricket and all the other sports to another level. And then, because of my Mediterranean personality, I was kind of encouraged by racing to be it myself and to be outgoing and to smile and to interact with people. And And that's how things have changed. And so I guess people can relate to me because I can bring them closer to my sport.
And let's talk about then that moment where you absolutely lifted racing to another level whilst almost bankrupting the accompanying bookie industry as well. So you rode an impossible 7 winners on one day at Ascot in 1996. The last was Fujiyama Crest, 16-1, virtually a no-hoper. And you've spoken about saying that it didn't, that last one, it didn't feel like you were racing. It was more like you were an observer. And this is something I've heard with a few people when they've reached this level of performance that is just extraordinary. So can you just describe what that was like and how that felt to you?
It was mad, to be honest with you. I mean, when I got the 6, I equaled the record. And that, for me, that was good enough. You know, 300 years record. Only myself, Alex Russell, Willie Carson, and Sir Gordon Richard done it. I thought, great. And this horse, Fujiyama Crest, didn't win a race for a year. It was out of form. It was 16-1, like you said. Couldn't see a win. And I remember I was walking into the parade ring before the race, and I glanced at the electronic betting screen, and it was 2-1 favor. And I was saying to myself, how crazy is this? This horse can't win. But you know what? I went out there, and I was so relaxed. I didn't put pressure on myself because I couldn't see the horse win. And probably, and that's why I probably won, because I didn't get myself in a panic, and I just rode it like I always do, and I guess the natural talent and the adrenaline and whatever other things you want to stick in there made the horse win. The crowd, it's just bizarre, really bizarre, like even up to now when I think back, I mean, how we won, I really don't know. And it was mad, completely surreal.
Did it feel, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but almost otherworldly, almost mystical, like you were connecting with a bigger force. Was there that sense of that?
I felt numb, actually. I felt like I was there, you know, but I wasn't there. You know, it's very hard to explain. That 3 hours of my life was an absolute madness.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You know, from 2 o'clock to 5:30, what happened to me that day? Emotionally, I cannot even put into words what happened to me that day. But it was just, you know, like I said, like an outer force from somewhere else just carried me through that day. I really don't know. It's surreal, you know. And even now, it gives me goosebumps. It's been 25 years. I'm really looking back to it. What happened that day?
Yeah, I've heard a few people talk like this. I've heard Johnny Wilkinson talk when he kicked the winning drop goal in 2003. He had this sense of himself not being there. Damon Hill once appealed to the ghost of Ayrton Senna, and he said he felt that his self wasn't there. And now you're saying a similar thing. So the effortlessness of great performances, there is something where there's a theme where people talk about themselves not being there. And it sounds like you're describing a similar thing.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's really much, really, it takes over you. I don't know how you call it. I don't know if it's adrenaline or just the purple patch. I don't know what it is, but, you know, to a point that you don't feel any fatigue. You just trust me up, because don't forget, the horse is very sensitive. You know, we always say the horse got a sixth sense. You know, we use horses for blind people, for people that are deaf, or people with special needs. So they feel things that perhaps us human beings can't. And I guess the last one, or probably all those seven horses that rode there, that they felt that it's something in me that lifted them and made them perform better. Yeah, you can't really. There is no word for it. You know, I think perhaps we should invent a word for it.
And you talk about the importance of that connection with the horse that you just mentioned. That they sort of pick up on how you're feeling. And you know, when I've heard you talk about this, I think about, and it's quite sad, but Christopher Reeve, obviously, when he had his accident, he said that for a moment he lost. He was in the future. He was thinking about a jump, two or three jumps away, and the horse sensed it, and the horse stopped. So clearly, the connection between the horse and yourself is absolutely crucial. As someone who as well connects with people so well, what's the difference between, or the similarity even between, connecting with people and then connecting with the horse, like you did to win that incredible seventh?
Well, we've got a language barrier. Obviously, that's a start. They you know, like I said, they're very, very sensitive. They pick up in a lot of things. I mean, I forever try to surround myself with positive people, try to have a nice, positive outlook, because those picks it up. So if I go to the races that I'm negative, or I've had an argument with my family, or something is bothering me, the horse picks it up, but it doesn't perform. So I'm trying to have a good frame of mind so I can transmit it to the horse. But there comes a lot of things, tone of voice, your body language, and the horse feels it. And where we use words to interact with one another as humans, with the horse is different. Like I said, body language, you know, They smell it, they can feel it, they can touch it, you know.
But they say with people, you know, roughly 80-90% of communication is non-verbal, is about body language. So there probably is more of a similarity. Obviously, we're stuck up in our heads and think too much, but we do pick up on people's energy. How much is authenticity and vulnerability then important to that relationship with the horse?
It is very important. You know, look, don't forget... you can't pigeonhole one horse the same. They're all different. I remember when I started to work for Luca Cumani as a kid, he said to me, you have to find the key for every horse. And every horse got a different key. So, you know, you can bully the one that needs bullying. You have to reassure the ones that lack confidence. You have to find the key for every one of them, because at the end of the day, if you're not together, you're not going to win. Simple as. So you have to be one. Me and him or her, we have to be one. Because, you know, the horse doesn't read the paper. He says, oh, today the Derby is 1.5 mile. He hasn't got a clue. So he's got to trust me to say, let's slow down a little bit here, we're going too fast. And at the end, come on, let's go, let's pass these, because the race is nearly finished. And you can only do that if you have the complete, utter trust of the horse. And that's the difference between winning or losing.
Amazing.
You have to, you know, like I said, you have to have the almost trust of you, because you know, otherwise it won't work. I know it sounds complicated, but it's not.
It makes sense. The Italian way of being, which is more emotional, which emotions are a bit closer to the surface. So if you're angry, you're angry. You don't sort of suppress it in the way like British people or other nations do. Does that help?
Well, I'm the world's worst. I mean, I show my mood. I can never play poker because I'm up 1 minute and down the next. I can, you know, I wear my emotion on my sleeves. I mean, I cry watching TV. I mean, like last year when I got beat on Enable, she was in the art. That was the third race. And I had another four races after that. I mean, my lip was dragging on the floor. I had to pick myself up. So I'm the world's worst about that. But I think the Mediterranean people, not just the Italians, the Spanish or the Greeks, or we are more emotional, and we express as emotion a lot more than we do in Britain. And I can't change that. Sometimes I wish I couldn't do that, but hey, it is what it is. Unfortunately, I'm like that.
But it enables the emotions to move through a bit quicker, you know?
Yeah, it's probably true, you know? It's sometimes it's bad, but sometimes it's more fun.
Yes. You mentioned Epsom, the Derby, the Wimbledon, the Super Bowl, the Open of racing. Is that fair? Is it on that level to you?
It is. You know, we, in any sport, you got a pinnacle of event. You got the Monaco Grand Prix, you got Wimbledon, you got the Super Bowl. So every sport's got their ticket. You know, the blue ribbon for us is the Investec Derby. When you start as a kid, for example of me, you know, do you want to win the Epsom Derby? It is the race. Racing for 350 years are breeding thoroughbreds to win that race. End off. So it only comes once a year. The Investec Derby is an event, and that's what people are racing horses for, to win that race. Not, unfortunately, it goes down to maybe 14 or 20 runners, but when you think about it, it's 8,000 horses, 10,000 horses in this country. It only goes down to the last 20, so it's a massive selection, and it's everything for us.
I was actually lucky. I went to school literally just around the corner, and I remember.
Did you?
I did, yeah, and the buzz when the racing was on, when the Derby was on, like you say, reminds me of those other events like Wimbledon. And you've won it twice, but 14 times you raced and didn't win it. And the pressure was building. Everyone was saying, Frankie, when are you going to win? Frankie, when are you going to win? How did you cope with the pressure of that? Because coping with pressure is something crucial to sport, but also in life.
Well, it was, look, it's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. So basically, you know, it was getting tiring to hear the same story. Oh, why you haven't won the Derby? You won everything else. And, you know, and unfortunately, it only comes once a year. You know, you only get one shot. And it got to a point that when I got to the last year that I won, that it was obvious to everyone that I had my best chance. And I did a press conference, I think 10 days before, and I said, listen, let's get it over and done with and leave me alone, because, you know, I don't want to ask questions for the next 10 days, you know.
So when you did win, what was there, a case of surrender? What was it?
It was a relief, I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you, I didn't really enjoy it. I know I won, but it was a relief, you know, it was like a big weight off my shoulder. It was much better the second time because I was 44 and my kids were older, and to a point that I can tell you up to this day is probably the most emotional I ever felt after a race.
Really? Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, to a point that my body felt like jelly, like I didn't have any energy, and it was, really, really emotional, exciting. Yeah, I think that was the biggest thrill I've had after a race.
So if you were then...
When Golden Horn won in 2015.
When I think of great sports people, there's something about the number three that's got a ring to it. You're bang in form. You said winning number two, your body felt like jelly. Your kids were there. They had the banner.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to win number three this time, what would that mean then?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to ride in one of the favorites called English King, the same owner of Stradivarius, Bjørn Nilsson. I'm excited about that. And, I'm older and mature. I don't shake in my boots anymore. I can tackle it like a man and looking forward to it. It would mean a lot because I won every classic three times or more and the Derby only twice. So it'd be good tick in the box for me. And, it'd be good if I can do it.
And obviously, you know, if you do it, you know, there will be a journalist saying, oh, Frankie, you've won this, you know, you've completed the set of hat tricks. When are you going to retire? So are you ready for those questions?
I told you 20 minutes ago that after the lockdown, I'm not ready to retire.
It's not me. It's not me. It's those other people who will be saying it, Frankie. What will you say to them? I mean, you could put out a message now.
No way. No. No.
Okay, let's talk about some of the lessons then, Frankie. And I think actually that kind of hints to it. I heard someone ask you if you ever had a five-year plan, and you laughed and said, I plan as far ahead as 7 o'clock tonight. So you're very much someone who lives in the present. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Basically, you just imagine yourself, you are on the treadmill at... 14k an hour speed, that's going pretty slick, for 30 years. And at the moment, I want to stay on it. And one day, I'll have to get off it and I'll have to readjust myself to live a different life, you know, because... But at the moment, I love it. I like living in the fast lane. I like to go fast. This has been part of my life. But it will come a point that I'll have to change. But at the moment, I'm not ready for it. So the plan, there is no plan. You know, in my sport, I'm one fall away from planning. You don't know. So at the moment, I'm healthy. I'm in demand. I ride the best horses. I work for a guy, John Gosden, who is my father figure, is my mate. He uses me like Ferguson used to use Ole Solskjaer. Just puts me in the last 20 minutes. I just do the easy tap-in goal and walk out off the pitch. That's all and perfect. So he saves me mentally and physically. He's got the best horses. At the moment, like I said, there is no plan. But it will, you know, I'm not going to ride forever, of course. I know that. But I don't want to think about it at the moment. And everybody keeps on telling me, what are you going to do after? I really don't know. And that's the question. I don't even want to think about it. Then, like I say, one day I'll have to get off the treadmill and change way of life. And, you know, because nothing will fulfill what I'm doing now. So, and, you know, I know that. I know that. But, you know, we'll tackle that problems when we finish. If there's anybody who was listening to this, got any advice, please let me know.
And I think the lockdown, you mentioned a treadmill. It's felt like the stopping of the society treadmill for everyone. And I think
yes.
it's had that feel to it, hasn't it? And as well, Frankie, you said you talked about one ride or one fall from planning. Before we talk about what happened, you know, 20 years ago, do you ever have that fear? Because obviously doing what you do and have done for so long, it's a dangerous sport. Do you ever have to deal with fear in that way?
Listen, it's like, if you're going to have a shower, you're going to get wet. If you ride horses, you are going to fall sooner or later. You cannot avoid it. It's part of our jobs. I mean, it's since my 35 years and I've been riding, I was in a race where one guy died I've got three of my friends been paralysed. I mean, it does happen, you know what I mean? But if you think like that, then you won't get out of the house. You know, it's a dangerous sport, you know. We try to keep it as safe as we can, but it is what it is. If you start thinking about it, then you won't do it.
Do you have to actively push those thoughts out of your mind?
Well, you got to, but, you know, I guess anyone who does a dangerous sport has to think like that. Otherwise, you won't be doing it. It's like I said, if you're gonna have a shower, you're gonna get wet. So if you ride horses, at some stage you are gonna fall. You try to avoid it, and you don't know when it's gonna happen, but it does happen. But you know, that's the only thing I know. I know to ride horses. I know to be competitive, to win races. This I've been doing all my life. I don't know anything different.
So when you're racing then, obviously, because it is dangerous, and are you always completely present when you're riding a horse, or does your mind ever wander when you're racing?
I think, look, once them stores open, you forget about everything. You forget about everything. You fear, nervousness, be happy, upset. All you want to do is win. And I think not just me, I think any jockey out there or any sportsman, you know, like the guys in motor racing, I guess once they get on their car, they want to win, you know. They're not going to think about, you know, I might have a crash. You can't think like that. I think is bred in us to be like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite madness when you tell somebody that works 9 to 5 and sits in the office what we actually do. They think, you know, you must be crazy. You know, go out there risking your life every day. Well, that's what we do. And we love it.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, you're completely in the moment.
Yeah.
You have these transcendent, almost mystical experiences, the connection with the crowd. I mean, it is pure presence.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a pretty lucky in my career. I've only broken 10 bones, you know. If you ask McCoy, he probably broke 30. And when I tell people, oh, I broke 10 bones, they said, oh, you really? Yes, you must be crazy. No, it's actually quite good, I thought. Oh, dear. It's mad.
Let's talk, frankly, quickly about that moment then that did change your outlook to some degree. When you were involved in a horrific experience, and obviously I don't want to, you know, re-traumatise you or anything like that, but you were involved in a plane crash 20 years ago. And it did change your outlook. But something I heard you say as well, that when you felt the plane was coming down and you were sure that you were going to die, there wasn't a sense of fear, more a sense of sadness.
Yeah, you know, I was just disappointed I was going to die, because I wasn't even scared of dying, but I thought, not really, are you going to take me away like this? You know, I just got a child. I'm only 29. I would just, you know, but I was, when I was standing at the ground going down, I thought, we're going to die. And then, it was just the feeling of disappointment, sadness, you know. I'm not scared of it. Not scared. Of course I was scared, but not really. The thought of, you know, I had so much more to give, you know. When I did come round after the crash and I was on the plane, I didn't know if I was on the other side, if I was in another world, or in brackets, heaven, or, you know, really, I had this sense of, you know, really, do you know what to think? And then, and Ray Cochrane, my mate, he dragged me out the plane and the plane exploded. So I was lucky twice, not once, twice. I should have been dead. 20 years ago, I should have been dead. And here we go. Now I'm talking to you about it. And I'm ashamed that my pilot, Patrick McKay, died. So, it took me 2 years to get out of it. I was a bit of a trauma for 2 years, to be honest with you. I wasn't myself. I couldn't see that, but my family was telling me. But then eventually, time heals everything, and I got out of it. But it was not a very pleasant experience, let me tell you.
God, no. Two things, Frankie. So, looking back at how you felt when you thought you know, it was all going to be over, are you surprised that your primary feeling was one of sadness and disappointment rather than fear? Because I imagine most people expect in that situation their overriding feeling would be one of terror.
I was surprised. Yeah, I was surprised. I guess because I already gave up the thought that I was going to survive. I knew I was going to die. And I thought, well, there's no point screaming and, you know, yelling. That's it. it's finished. That's all. That's all. The other thing went in my mind. And it did surprise me. You know, perhaps, you know, I should have been screaming and shouting, but I didn't.
And was Ray equally calm, if you like? Or, I mean, how was he? Did he have a similar feeling? I don't know if you've spoke to him about that.
Well, he was next to me and he looked at me and he said, you better buckle up. And I'm looking at you thinking, what do you mean buckle up? We're going to die. Buckle up what? You know, do you think if you pull your seatbelt a bit tight, it's going to survive? That's what I wanted to tell him, but I couldn't speak. But that's, you know, it was a surreal moment, you know. You can't put into words what we went through. It's just...
No.
It's just crazy, really.
Ray did save your life, and like you said, the plane exploded, and then you had 2 years of dealing with the trauma, and then you came out the other side. So how did it affect your outlook on life, and what did you learn about life and living life from that?
It may be a bit more lazy. I think if I didn't have that crash, I could achieve a lot more in my career. Now I kind of enjoy life a bit more. I don't care what people say too much. And like I said, if he has changed me a bit, it's probably changed me, like I said, a bit more laid back. I tried to be myself. Yeah, I was a bit more focused and different before. And I didn't take too much time of life in general. I was a bit tunnel visioned.
Did it make you more appreciative of life? And you're obviously someone who lives so much in the present. Was that magnified by what happened?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean, you know, a big lesson in life. You know, every day is great. I should have been dead 20 years ago. 20 years ago, we should not have this conversation. And so, crazy. I got 5 kids now. I'm still riding. Pretty mad, really, when you look back.
Do you have to remind yourself of it sometimes? Or is that sense of gratitude for what happened and for life generally, is it always there?
I'll be honest with you, until I'm talking to you, I never actually enters my mind these kind of things. Only when people try to analyze like we're doing it now, then, yeah, I do, you know, I have changed and things have changed. But, you know, usually I just, like you said, I live a day at a time. I'm looking at things that are coming up. You just have to live the moment.
Indeed. But I know, didn't your mum recently text you, though, that you were, I think, frustrated with lockdown and everything like that? And didn't she say, son, you may not be able to race, but remember you're alive, referring to that, what happened?
Yeah, you know, mum had to be careful because she had pneumonia 10 years ago. So if she gets the COVID, she might not see it through. So, she has to be really careful. So it's always kind of frightening having that thing in your mind that, you know, if you catch the COVID, you're not going to make it through. So it must be very hard for her to live like that.
Yeah.
And so we kind of both try to reassure each other. Obviously, I should have been dead 20 years ago, but I'm not. And I'm talking on behalf of my mother, but it must be a lot of elderly people out there that they have to live with that fear, you know?
Okay, Frankie, so listen, if you had to share some advice, some life wisdom from what you've learned along your journey, what sort of things would you say?
I think have a positive outlook in life. Try to not stress yourself too much. And I'm lucky. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy racing and I enjoy the horses. But, you know, try to have a positive outlook before you leave the house. I think that's very important.
Carpe diem, live for the day, leads to la dolce vita. Is that fair?
La dolce vita, yeah. Correct. Always la dolce vita.
All right. Well, listen, Frankie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. You're a superstar of the sport.
Thank you.
A cracking head of hair, like I said. And sounds like to me you're nailed on for number 3 at the Derby.
Come on. Great. I'm looking forward to it. I hope after this sour chat that we had, I didn't confuse many people.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Don't Tell Me The Score. I really hope you enjoyed our conversation. And I would, of course, be delighted to hear your thoughts, ideas and questions. Do get in touch via my website, simonmundy.com. I do really appreciate you listening. And if you could leave a kind rating and review, I would be sincerely grateful. All that remains is for me to say I hope you'll join me again next time. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.